vuol dire che nel... no.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the show tonight. A little bit different. I did a live stream this morning. I was talking about this show, and then about an hour or so ago, local prepper hit me up and said, hey, man, you want me to come on? I was like, heck yeah, let's do that. It's much easier when I've got somebody else that can blab, flap their gums, than just me by myself. So I was like, heck yeah, we'll do that. Tonight we are going to be talking about, wherever we go with this. I did want to talk a little bit about it being preparedness month. And, as I said this morning, I want to say thank you to everyone. I've got a video that I want to play here that, everybody or a lot of people put together, it's been around 10 years since I've been doing Survivalist Prepper, whether it's the podcast or the YouTube channel, all that stuff. So it's kind of interesting because Brian Duff and a few members did some video clips and everything. And right before I saw this, I told Brian that I was going to have to put our Survival Prepper show on hiatus for a little bit. And then this comes out and then I feel like a complete heel now. But I had to do it because I have to focus on Survivalist Prepper. So for everyone that listens to that show, it will be back in the future. Brian and I still might do some things here and there, but it's just not going to be the weekly thing. But today, before I get into a lot of that and before I play this video that some of the members did for me, what have you been up to, local? And we've been we talked a little bit before the show, and you've been up to about the same thing as me as far as YouTube goes. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. So a lot of people have been asking where I've been. Basically, for the last 30 to 40 days, I've been moving from one town to the next. So it's been basically me and my Explorer just shoving stuff in and driving it over there. And between that and trips to the dump, it's been a pretty amazing month.
Yeah. That's and I do want to talk about that a little bit later too, about the gas prices and all that, and I'm sure that you experienced that basically how the frog in the boiling pot of water. Basically, we're used to this $4 out here anyway. It's creeping up around $4. I don't want to get into that too much right now because we'll get into that later. But yeah, all of those things. If you see any comments that I miss, LP, make sure and let me know. If I miss him. Hey, Matt, what's going on? I haven't talked to Matt in a while. White Rabbit, Exploring with Nomad, Robert Van. A few of these are probably your peeps.
There's a handful of them in there.
Yeah. But I did want to play this video real quick. It was kind of cool because I don't get on Facebook anymore. And I had to have a member of my group, our group over at members.survivalsprepper.net. He basically told me, hey, man, you need to log into Facebook and approve some of these people into your private group over there. And I watched the video and I was just blown away. It's sort of why it gives me it's why I started doing this stuff in the first place. When Lisa and I started about 10 years ago, I've been prepping for like a year or so. And I want to get into this with you after I do this too a little bit. I've basically been prepping for a year or so. So it was more of a journaling of the things I was going through and sort of sharing it, sort of sharing a journey with everybody that was listening to the show. And it's pretty cool that there are people that have been around since day one that are still doing it. So they've gone through that journey as well, and they've changed, and the things that they're doing have changed since then. There's a lot of people that have completely fallen off the radar. I think the majority of people probably get into it and fall off the radar, but it is pretty neat. The people you meet, the people, people like you, Vision Preparedness. Just a bunch of different preppers, a bunch of people in the preparedness community. Is pretty neat. And a few that I've met in person, and then there's some that you feel like Denise is in the chat right now. Never met Denise in person, but you feel like, you know, if you sat down at the coffee table with him or something, it'd just be like talking to an old friend. So it's just really cool. Let me, I know this is, you know, you're going to basically sit here and watch the show with me, but I've got this video I wanted to play, what these guys put together. And then we'll talk about how everyone in the chat, how your preparedness has changed from when you started to what you're doing now and all that stuff. Let me go ahead and play this real quick.
Hey, Dale. Brian here. And hey, a bunch of people got together and wanted to wish you and Survivalist Prepper, along with Lisa, a happy 10th-ish anniversary in doing the online preparedness stuff. Man, you've been amazing. You brought in a low-key, common sense, easygoing, fun thing to the not Canadian prepper doom and gloom world of preparedness. It's been awesome. I owe you a ton. I've had a great time doing this survival prepper show with you for, what, 2 or 3 years now? Plus, you're the one, your podcast, like I've said many times, is what the first prepper podcast that I started listening to in Baghdad back in the day, and it's what motivated me to get into all this stuff. So with that, thanks a lot, buddy, and here's some other great people to say thank you to you as well. Enjoy, keep up the great work, and I'm sure I'll be seeing you soon. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, Dale, it's Jammer WV here. Hey, congratulations on 10 years of Survivalist Prepper. We appreciate all your hard work you put into all this, and looking forward to it being even bigger as you continue to make it grow. I've been listening since about 2015 and became a member of the Academy, the Bug Out location, and now the new community. It's great to have everybody come together and discuss ideas, and I appreciate you making all that happen for us. You're making it so much better every year. So keep going. We need your assistance in making things better for preparedness. Thanks, Dale.
Hey, Dale and Lisa, the other Brandon here. Jammer recently pointed out that August is going to be 10 years of you guys putting out amazing content in YouTube, podcasts, everything else. I wanted to say congratulations and thank you. Over the years, you've really helped the way I've thought about everyday carry, about what I keep in the truck, about what I keep in my bag. Keep it up. Love your content. Love you guys. Congratulations.
Hey, Dale. Brandon Rhodes here. Greetings from sunny Southern Colorado. Just kidding. I'm in California right now, but wanted to wish you all the best of anniversaries, and thank you for all you've done with the Survivalist Prepper, and thanks to Lisa for being along for the ride.
Hi, Dale and Lisa. Denise Kaufman here. Congratulations on your 10th anniversary. I think I've been with you just about since the very beginning. Pernier. And I don't believe I've listened to a dull show yet. They've all been exciting, informative, everything I've needed. I appreciate all your hard work. So much so that Pernier bought you Manilow tickets to Columbus this weekend, but I kind of figured you'd rather I support the show through the Bug Out location or whatever. Manilow versus Denise, I don't know which one you'd prefer, but you got my support anyway, so happy anniversary and many more. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. Just getting some hammock time in, taking a break from doing a project on a lazy Sunday afternoon. Just thinking about our journey from being preppers to homesteaders. You know, it was a pretty long journey. And along the way, we've met people that have come into our lives and accompanied us on this journey. And some of these people are still in our lives, and we've known them for 10, 15 years now. And I started thinking about it, and there's other people that came on this journey with us that don't even know us, don't even realize they were with us. And Dale and the crew over at Survivalist Prepper are some of those people. You know, I started listening to Survivalist Prepper when it was still just a podcast. I think I came in on episode 3 or 4. And I would download it off of iTunes, put it on MP3 player, throw the headphones on, and listen to it while I was working around the homestead, the property. And we've listened to it on long road trips. I got the missus turned on to it, and she really enjoyed it. You know, and they'd give us some good prepper information, some tips and tricks, but mostly it was entertainment. It helped pass the time while we were doing all this stuff. You know, listening to Dale complain about having to build horse jumps for Lisa or cranky old Mr. Johnson next door, Lisa's tinfoil hat time, and Brian's practical application of what he knew or what he had learned on his travels around the world. You know, it was just good entertainment. And we started listening to him on YouTube once that became big. And we kind of came and went, you know, over the time as our interests changed. But we always found ourselves going back to Survivalist Prepper. And I had the distinct pleasure to be on a live stream with Dale and Brian over on Tag's Life Done Free. And since then, I've talked to them and we've done some collaborative work online. And I really enjoyed it. They're both really good guys. And I'm looking forward to meeting Lisa. We're gonna talk him to come out to a Midwest Preparedness Festival at some time. We're going to have to drag him out here kicking and screaming. But we'll get him out here. You know, and I just want to say thanks to Survivalist Prepper, all three of y'all, for being part of that journey with us and making it more enjoyable. Take care.
Cansey here, up here in Northern Ontario, Canada. I want to take this opportunity to wish Dale and Lisa congratulations on your 10-year anniversary. Love is a funny thing. You need a good sense of humor to make your marriage last. Take for example, you got a homestead couple like Dale and Lisa, and you have to start over again and again every morning. Now get this, Dale is a smart guy because he cracked a code in a long-term marriage. This is a partnership we're talking about here, eh? And there are rules in every relationship. Two rules in particular I want to talk about, like for Dale. The first rule is that Dale must make Lisa feel like she's getting everything, because she is. And the second rule is that Dale actually has to let Lisa have her way in everything. Give you an example. When they argue, Lisa has to have her way. When there's a final decision with the family wallet, give that wallet over to Lisa. When it comes to renovating the house, let Lisa decide the color of the paint. And when it comes to travel choices, well, northeast, southwest, as long as you're going forward, Dale, let Lisa pick the choice. Dale, you are an absolute genius, because over 70% of marriages are ending in divorce, but not Dale. No, sir. He knows how to keep that fire burning. Superbly done. Congratulations.
Dale, I've gotten to know you for about 3 years now, and I've had an absolute blast getting to know you and Lisa. I've had so much fun. I was blown away by the group you guys had put together in the chat and the different things that people share. And I was amazed that people were actually getting out there and doing things. I'd been an armchair prepper for so many years, but actually being encouraged to do things has virtually and truly changed my life. We wouldn't be together and here without you. I really appreciate the Survivalist Prepper Online Mag, because that's a terrific community of people who really do mutually assist each other. And so I just wanted to say thanks. Seems shallow, but I really truly do mean it. I count you and Lisa as my friends, and I look forward to coming out west and getting to see you face to face and giving you a big hug.
Hi, Dale. Daisy Luther here. I just wanted to stop by and congratulate you for 10 years of blogging. First of all, there are over 500 million blogs on the internet right now, and fewer than 30% of those are successful. So you're vastly in the minority having such a wonderful, successful website. But what I think is more important is the community that you've created. You've brought together people from all over the country and all over the world who want to support each other and help each other become better prepared to face whatever emergencies are coming down the pipe. And to me, that's your real accomplishment. That is something that you've done that so few people could accomplish. So congratulations on 10 years. I'm wishing you 10 more and all the best.
Hey, Dale, VP here, Vision Preparedness. I just wanted to take a moment and congratulate you on your 10-year anniversary for the prepping community. I want to say thank you for everything you do for the community and everything you've done for me personally and within the preparedness community. You are amazing, and I must say I am a little jealous, because you have a freeze dryer. That's on my list of stuff to get, but I just want to take a quick moment and say thank you. I appreciate everything you do for the prepping community. Take care and God bless. Vision Preparedness, I'll see you soon.
So it's just really cool, man. And I want to say thank you to everybody that's listening and gave me the motivation to actually do this crap and keep doing it. It's just kind of cool when you see people like that. One thing I wanted to say to Kenzie was, Kenzie misunderstood. He thought they were talking about mine and Lisa's anniversary. So that's what he was talking about in there. And he made a correction clip, and I forgot to put it in here. So that's my fault. So regardless, still good advice. So it's just pretty cool. I mean, I that's why I do this stuff. You know, the money is a means to an end, and it is important. But the real important stuff is the whole reason I started this, the whole reason you do what you do and Vision does what he does and all of that is to just kind of grow this community and get more people aware of these things and get good information out there rather than the BS, the fear mongering and all that stuff. So I'm sure that's why you got into it, starting to get online. Cause when I first started, it wasn't really that, but recently it's been that because it's like, okay, you know, there's just a lot of BS out there and there needs to be some rational thought out there. So just very, very cool. What I wanted to do is talk about sort of how preparedness for me has changed and everybody in the chat as well. You talk about regardless how long you've been doing it. And I also want to get your thoughts on it too, because when I first started this, it was like I said, I'd been doing it for about a year or so. Lisa was into preparedness when I met her. I've been married to her a couple years before I actually got online, and she's the one that got me into it. And my thoughts in the beginning, a little bit intimidated, I suppose, because I didn't really know a lot about the preparedness community. I knew a lot about preparedness and things like that. But you have this idea that it's like this James Wesley Rawls type community, right? Where everybody's wearing flak jackets and, you know, all this just this crazy hardcore stuff. And here's me living in, you know, in a rural area with not a whole lot, and I'm trying to get online and do this stuff, and I'm feeling like I'm going to be just like being chastised and being made a fool out of. And then you see like the community that you've built, you've put together, the community I've put together, the people that we interact with, completely different than my thoughts when I first started. What were your thoughts about this? And you've got a little bit of a different background as far as military and all of that stuff. But what were your thoughts when you first decided? Well, let me back up here. How long were you prepping before you decided to get online? And what were your thoughts about what you were doing and your reservations and all that stuff?
I started prepping in around like really prepping 2008.
Okay. You know,
just the standard learning how to put things in buckets and Mylar and doing Mylar with irons and clothes or the hair straighteners and just the very beginnings of it. And then I didn't start doing anything on YouTube until about 3 years ago. And, you know, the same boat. I started doing it about 3 years ago because honestly, it sounds weird, but so I won't say his last name. His first name is Matt. He's a former Special Forces. You won't see any of those things those accolades that I use. Sometimes I'll throw a hint in one of my screens, but he was one of these guys that was just cashing in on it. And it really pissed me off that, he brought this guy on. He was supposed to be super medic doc. And he was showing you this little kit, this little medical kit that was going to save your life. And I started looking at it, and it was just like, okay, wait a minute. So let's hit the old Google machine and Amazon and find out exactly how much it would take to make this kit. And the markup that they had on it was so outrageous. It just enraged me so much that people were like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I'm like, take your head out of the bucket, man. Buy all this stuff yourself. you know? Yeah. And, you know, it just really, really bothered me. And then I found that there were a lot of people out there on YouTube that were doing the same exact thing over and over and over and over. And don't get me wrong. I've got a Patreon. I sell things on Amazon. I get sponsorships all the time. You know, I'm making like $3 every time you spend $5 million on Amazon. You know, I'm getting yeah. so rich. But I started doing it, and I still do it because I just, you know, I had some company send me, I'm not going to say their name because I've got to do a video. I promised I'd do a video. Somebody sent me a can of roast beef to like taste on, you know, do a review on it, right? All right, good to go. It's $35 a can. It's this big.
$35.
$35 a can. There's nothing magical or special about it at all. And the company's out of Colorado too. So yeah, it's just stupid stuff like that. You know, I mean, you know, I ping the environment, say, what do you guys think? And it's like, well, that's stupid. Well, that's what we're going to roll with. That's stupid. You know, because, yeah. you know, all, and it's funny too, because all these videos out there about, you know, doing a $1.25 tree bug out bag. Yeah, it's very possible. You know, is it the greatest thing on the planet? No. Will it work? Yes, it will. So that's
possibly.
Well, you'd be surprised, man. You'd be surprised. Some of that stuff is junk and some of it not so much, you know, but you can get away with a lot of stuff for a short period of time. And if you only got to go 72 hours, Dollar Tree might save your life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but there's still that. It's hard for me to go that route just because, yes, the odds, you know, maybe there's a 70-80% chance that that stuff was going to work for you. It's not going to fail in a 3-day period, maybe even more than that.
Yeah.
But there's still that Murphy's Law thing that always yeah. seems to bite me in the ass, that if I'm going to use something, even if it's a Band-Aid or a roll of gauze right from the dollar store, the roll of gauze is about a quarter of the size of a real roll, and you're going to run out, or the Band-Aid's not going to stick, or, you know, it's just those things that kind of, but I agree with you, yeah.
There are definitely certain things you don't want to get all pinch pennies on.
Yeah. You
know, but there's no reason to buy a $175 knife because some guy said it worked great in the field.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, and you know what? Unfortunately, a lot of that stuff, it works. These channels are huge. And I forgot to mention too, Morgan, she's doing this is Preparedness Month, and she's doing a 30 days to preparedness, and she's got a lot of, let me see if I can pull up this, this list that she's got, but these are the type of people, that actually do add to the community, sort of what we're talking about here. These types of people, she's got a list right here. She's got hers. I did one. Me and Brian did one. Prepper Potpourri. She's awesome. Iridium 242s. It's awesome. The preparedness guy. Prepping with Sarge is great. All of these, Vision Preparedness, Roaming Prepper, who's in the chat. All of these people that are doing this stuff to actually add to the community, not take from it. And you had mentioned, you know, there's the Patreon stuff, the Amazon stuff. There's got to be a little bit of that because it's we have to be able to continue to do it. But at the same time, it's for us, and maybe I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm pretty sure you feel this way. For us, that's not the main reason. That's like I said in the beginning, that's a means to an end. But for some people, that is the absolute goal. I remember when I first got into this, Survival Life was the website that is it's corporate prepping is what it is.
Exactly.
They offer you a little trinket and you get on their list and then they sell your list to whoever. And that is, you know, that is just not the way I like to go about this stuff. So it's just, when I first started, that's the reason I did the bug out location the way I've done it too, is to teach people the actual practical part of preparedness, the things that really matter in preparedness. And that's how I've just gone about this whole thing. That's how Lisa and I live. We change things, we do things, we don't go super overboard. I build things to my strengths or build on my strengths and work on my weaknesses and all that and just do what we can do. I'm not a super prepper by any means, and you're never going to hear me say that I am on YouTube or anything else. So
super prepper.
Yeah. Kanzi is up there. Oh, I did want to say something about Kanzi too. Kanzi, even though it is up in Canada, speaking of speaking of those people, the people that are just in it for the money, you know who I'm talking about. Brian mentioned him in the beginning of that video. But Kanzi's up in Canada. I really want to get Kanzi on to even just an audio podcast, because that dude has got a wealth of information. He's a native up there in Canada, does a lot of what we call bushcraft and stuff down here. Just a wealth of knowledge, really, really smart guy and really dialed in as far as preparedness goes. But it's people like that. It's people like White Rabbit. It's that have done this stuff and has grown. I've seen some of the things just in the last couple of years with her, the things she's done. So it's just kind of cool. We're watching this community grow, the real preppers. And it's not the, granted, there are some people out there, and maybe if I had the means to do it, hell, I'd have a prepper community, a compound, a bunker, you know, all that stuff. If I had the means to do that, it's not in the cards, so to speak. And being a prepper, I didn't get into this for the money. I'm not going to become a millionaire being a YouTube prepper. So the odds of me getting a bunker, unless I dig it myself.
Yeah, I'm about to say, you better get in your backyard with a shovel like right now, because that's how you're going to get a bunker.
Yeah. It's going to be a root cellar, and I'll call it a bunker, just like I call my basement the bunker. One thing we were talking about in the group too, and how I talked about how preparedness has changed, and how when I first started out, there were things that we did. And then over time you learn, whether you're talking about different skills, you're talking about wasting things, lessons, you're learning lessons about things. We were talking about 5-gallon buckets in the group, about storing 5-gallon buckets. And I thought it was pretty interesting, because the average person looking in to preparedness, you would think that as to be a good prepper, you have to have your basement filled with 50, 60 buckets of rice, beans, and all that stuff, right? And honestly, when I first started prepping, I was sort of in that mindset of, okay, I'm not bagging on the whole 5-gallon bucket thing. But what I'm saying is, I was in that mindset in the beginning of, yeah, I'm just going to store everything within 5-gallon buckets. And then you figure out that you're not using as much. Say I've got a 5-gallon bucket of flour, right? I opened that 5-gallon bucket of flour. Now that the clock started ticking on that flour, and I've got to use that 5 gallons of flour within a year or so.
Yeah.
And that it just didn't work out that way. So I stopped. I sort of went away, I guess is my point, from a lot of the 5-gallon buckets, and more towards, especially now that I got a harvest, right, more towards the freeze dried stuff, more towards the things that I'm going to use on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Do you do? And a lot of people in the group, they had mentioned how, yes, they do some of the 5-gallon stuff, but nothing like, you know, like you would think that. From the outside looking in, that preppers do. Do you do? How is your 5-gallon bucket stuff in your preparedness plans?
Well, you know, it's people have a tendency to move away from the 5-gallon buckets, but that's actually a mistake, and it really has a lot to do with their plans. Okay, so here's why. You know, we always tell people to diversify, but you should also diversify your preps. So the real reason for the 5-gallon buckets is because they're mobile. You know, one of the things that I personally learned, because I have just recently switched over to totes. You know, you go and buy yourself one of those 40-gallon black and white or black and yellow totes from Walmart, that's going to last you for a long time. But once you fill it with about 30 or 40 5-pound bags of Mylar, or of rice in Mylar, you're going to find out very quickly that you're not Arnold Schwarzenegger and you're not going to make it up. You know what I'm saying? You just keep throwing those bags in there. Every couple of weeks, you go to Walmart and you buy yourself a 5-pound bag of rice, and then you just put it in those Mylar bags. And you're just prepping your brains out. And then one day you try to move that tote, it ain't moving. So, you know, I literally had to like empty it out halfway and carry the other rice in another tote. And I have several totes like that. So you definitely, if you're going to be mobile in any way, shape or form, you should definitely have some 5-gallon buckets. And you know, it's like I got into it in the beginning with the old Gamma Seals and all that stuff. Well, I got news to tell you. What Gamma Seals are nice, don't get me wrong. If it's something you use every day, you're going to be in and out of it all the time, hey, that's great. But guys, take my advice. Do not buy Gamma Seals for long-term storage. because the seals will dry up. The rubber seal on the outside and the rubber seal on the inside ring, they will dry up. I know this. I have several. I've got hundreds of dollars worth of Gamma seals that I can't use anymore because I open them to check and crack goes the seals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, having those buckets, you definitely, you know, I would say you have at least 10% of your stocks in 5 gallon buckets.
Yeah.
Know? And, but go with the Mylar, put the Mylar in. You don't have to go and buy 50 pounds of flour. You know what I'm saying? You can buy the small doses of flowers, put them in small pieces of Mylar so that when you open them, you don't have that problem with having 50 pounds of flour that you have to use in the next 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Carla had put in the chat here. Not if you store 1 pound flour vacuum sealed and put them in 5 gallon buckets. So sort of along the same lines of what you were talking about. You don't have to, like I did when I first started out, get the 5 gallon Mylar bags, fill a whole 5 gallon bucket with flour, get those, portion them into smaller ones and still use the buckets, because those buckets are one, they're portable like you were talking about, but they're also armor. So if you're putting stuff in Mylar bags, that's a great way to store it. The freeze-dried stuff, I'm going to start doing some totes as well, but not for the real heavy stuff, because like you said, man, that becomes a pain. That would be a two-person job. Say we're in a bug-out situation. That's a two-person job loading up the truck.
Yeah, some creative redundancy said dollies, and that's great, dude. I mean, but now I'm spending money on dollies. I mean, come on. You know, if you're just going to store something long-term and you're never going to move it because it's at your primary location, then hey, great. Put it in totes and never worry about doing anything but dragging it across the floor. But if you've got to get out of town and your plan is to take a buttload of food with you because you don't know where you're going, because people rarely have a real bug out location, you know, so they're going to want to take as much food as they can. Then you've got to stay mobile. You those buckets are going to save your life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You can buy the real expensive containers, like $30, $40 for this one container, you know, and that's stackable. And it's just not going to do as good a job for the money.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one thing on the gamma lids you were talking about, which I absolutely 100% agree with. I have like 3 gamma lids, and what those are for is when I open up that flour, when I open up the rice or something like that, that gamma lid is on that package that I'm going to use. So all I do is the lid stays on there. Cause I'll tell you what, once you put a gamma lid on top of that bucket, that sucker's on there. It's a pain in the butt to get off. So I use it for that shorter term storage after I crack the seal, basically. Yeah. And then I take from that bucket and I fill up a smaller one that goes into the pantry. So it's sort of a 3-stage thing, but
yeah. It's absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But like I said, for long-term, not a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is those types of things, I suppose, that you learn throughout your preparedness journey, things that work. Canned foods is another thing. One of the big things that I think a lot of people, it's another one of those things that people think that, hey, this is a prepper thing. You got to just have shelves and shelves of canned food, and every nook and cranny of your house has got to be packed with some sort of canned food. Lisa and I went through that. Luckily, I mean, not quite that bad. We went through that, and it gets to the point 3-4 years later that you're pulling stuff out from the very back of the cabinet that, you know, maybe you could probably open and eat if it were an SHTF situation, but not a chance in hell I was going to do it right now when I can just drive to the grocery store. So it's that stuff that gets thrown away. So you really learn. And I think food storage is one of those big things. You really learn how to do those different things, what worked, what didn't work, and all of that stuff. Sort of the same with bug out bags, right? You start out with God. I mean, that's constantly changing.
I probably got 10, 12 packs on the other side of this camera, just sitting on the ground.
Yeah. Brandon said here, the other Brandon is, he was the one in the video, the other Brandon. You're going to be hard pressed to get a year's supply of food to bug out with and get any other supplies in a single load. A year's worth of food.
That's a lot of damn food.
I think if you're in a bug out situation, I don't know that you're going, I wouldn't be trying to take a year's worth of food. If you're in a bug out situation, you're abandoning a lot.
Yes.
So I forgot what I was going to talk to you about the whole bug out bag thing. Cause you're pretty big on that. You've got, a few different types of bags and you've changed different things over time. And I think it's pretty interesting that you talk about how the dollar store thing isn't necessarily a no-go, but it's kind of hard to kind of, I'm having a hard time trying to figure out what the hell I'm trying to say here, but you've got, I guess, tested different things, done different things through your, you know, even probably before you were on YouTube. But how has like your first bug out bag setup? Do you remember sort of how that was? Or did your military experience play into that as well? So you already had some kind of insights on that.
Well, actually, you know, the answer is a little bit of both. You know, my very first bug out bag, it was the typical, you know, pack light, freeze at night mentality. It was super low profile, super lightweight. It probably weighed 15 pounds tops, and it had just the minimalist survival stuff that you'd find in any one of the guys who like to make fire with sparks type ideas, you know. It evolved into, you know what, this is stupid, because in my original bug out plan, because I was living between Virginia and North Carolina, and, you know, the walking from one place to the next was actually part of the plan. And it was going to take me 3 weeks to get where I needed to go. So, you know, that balance between being as lightweight as possible, but yet having the things that were going to keep me from getting sick, you know, the ability to actually hunt, you know, it turned into a like a hybrid between a bug out bag and a, and what do they call those? Never coming home bags.
Inch bag, yeah.
An inch bag, there you go. So, yeah, it goes back and forth. You know, I have to change my whole philosophy now because of where I've recently moved to. You know, it just, the whole bug out bag is going to change from basically like a long range, like hiking slash camping, backpacking mentality to more of a lightweight mentality because there's a different bug out location now. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does evolve and it should evolve. You're supposed to do that every 6 months with your bug out bags because that way you're going through, you're getting the food and you're swapping the food out. You're, you know, anything that could go bad or rancid or attract an animal, you know, that or rodent, you need to get out of there and swap out, you know, just things like that, making sure that it's all making that 6 month assessment on your bag is actually kind of important if you're into bug out bags.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Kenzie asked here. He said, survivalist prepper and local prepper, what do you think about bucket caches in different locations? And I've got a PVC cache over here that I'm actually going to rebury, but I had a whole bunch of stuff in that. PVC is a lot thicker than a bucket, though. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sealed properly, I don't know. I mean, it's airtight, but I don't know how a bucket, it sounds like a good idea, but I don't know how it would do. Say that the ground saturated or something like that, I assume that it would do okay, but I don't know about, you know, 10, 15 years. I think the bucket would probably break down. What are your thoughts? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've seen that. It's not going to stay there long. So you're basically creating work for yourself if you want to go down that road. But what it is you need to check them at least once a year. You need to pull them up. You need to inspect them. Like I said, some foods will go bad, you know, and the canned goods are probably going to be fine, but you are going to have a moisture issue. A lot of times people don't think about it, but the standard 5 gallon bucket with the watertight lid that would normally come with it isn't as watertight as most people think. A lot of times you have to buy the ones that actually have seals on them. That mm-hmm. Very similar to how they would pack paint in a 5 gallon bucket. There's actually a rubber seal. You may have to change those seals out. You may have to replace the lids. And a lot of times they still leak. One of the things that I actually saw people do is do the 5 gallon buckets with a standard waterproof lid and then put a contractor's bag, wrap it up in a contractor's bag and then tape it closed and then bury it. And then make sure that when you do bury it, that you basically create a flap over the top so that if water does come down, it'll shed over the top of it into the ground. You also might want to contemplate getting yourself a bag of gravel and digging that hole and then filling the bottom of that thing, the bottom of that hole with gravel before you put your bucket inside of it, because that will create natural drainage. Any water that comes down will go past it all, will sheet past it all, and then go into that gravel and then into the ground.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think it's a great idea. I think it's one of the smartest things you can do. But you, like I said, about you got to go about once a year and get them out.
You know,
and they've got to be in a place where human beings are not really going to go to, you know. Otherwise, sooner or later, somebody will stumble across it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I had, like I said, I had this PVC pipe over here, and I've got the video on my channel. I had it buried for about a year, but in that PVC pipe, I had it a silicone around the whole top and the bottom of it, and just, I mean, sealed up super tight. It was only in the ground for about a year or so, and everything in it, I had ammo in it in plastic bags and all sorts of things, and everything was fine in there. I had a little Gerber knife in there, and it was fine. Nothing got real wet, but again, it was only in there for about a year. But it was sealed up pretty well. I think that's, if you're going to do something like that, I think that may be with that PVC pipe, it's going to handle the elements a little bit better, and make sure it's sealed up good. But yeah, depending on your situation, and if you have time to do it, and if you think it's going to be useful, I'd maybe put one out to test.
Yeah.
Stick it out there for a little while and see what happens before stuff in there.
Yeah. Do the research too. You know, find out where the, it's not the water line, but the, what's the line that they use on the maps that tells you how deep, where the water is?
Oh, I don't, I'm drawing a blank now.
Somebody put it in the chat, but you know what I'm talking about? It's like, if you dig deep enough, you will hit water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some places you just can't get away with that. You know, you can't dig it deep enough. And if you dig it too deep, you might literally just be digging right into water and you just wasted your time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Contour lines, Broken Nomad was talking about, but that's the water table. Brandon Butler was.
There you go. There you go. Jammer got it. There you go.
Yeah, Brandon. Contour lines is what I was thinking on a map, on a topographic map. Yeah, but water table, yeah.
Yeah, find out what your water table is, man.
Yeah. Well, I should have, and the reason I should have known that, because I've been doing a lot of research, well, for the last 2 years, been researching wells, and mine is 175 feet down. I was going to get one of those hand pumps. That's not happening.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd he die? He was pumping water.
Yeah. Yeah.
He died thirsty.
I'd have to make the kids move back in, put them to work. Just pumping water. Everyone take a shift. the other thing that changes too, and I think this is the big one that got me thinking about this, because 10 years doesn't seem like, it just seems like, it seems like forever ago that I started this. And you look back, life goes so damn slow, but when you really think about it, you look back and all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, my rides, you know, I'm over the hill now. Now we're going down the hill and it's almost over. But our, and I think Prepper Potpourri was in her video, she's talking about foods that don't expire. And in the beginning of that video, she talked about us having expiration dates as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a big factor when you're talking about your preparedness plans, your skills and all that stuff. So, and kind of what you were talking about with your bug out bag. 10 years ago, my physical condition and what I planned on doing were completely different than what my plans are now. My kids still lived in the house back then. A lot of things have changed over the course of time. So as you get older in preparedness, and honestly, I mean, I'm not quite to that point yet, but there does come to a point in your life too where it's like, okay, you know what? I've done the best that I can, and you know, there's not really much I can do at this point. I'm not, at some point you get to the age where you're just not hoofing it 40 miles. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Or you have physical conditions, you rely on medications, all those things. You've got to sort of come to grips with the fact that that's just the way that life is. And I think that's another thing that changes with our preparedness. We try to sort of pivot and figure out, you know, ways to incorporate certain things into our preparedness plans to kind of mitigate the dangers and things like that. But sometimes you just gotta, you know, you gotta be just got to be okay with the fact that, hey, man, I'm as good as I can get. And, you know, and hopefully the big bad, you know, the big bad things, the Marauders and all that don't come to my door. But if they do, I'm going to okay corral it, basically, and do the best I can. Mm-hmm. One thing, let me see where we're at here. If anybody's got anything in the chat, I'll try to look at those. And if you guys have any questions, any thoughts on things are changing and all that, but I did want to get into a little bit about, you were talking about moving and things like that and making trips. And I was talking to Lisa the other day and going to the gas station. It's kind of frustrating a little bit because you go to the gas station and you see out here we're up around $4 a gallon. And right now it's a little bit less than that. So you hear these people talking about how, oh, the gas prices are going down. And it really is frustrating because it is sort of that frog in the boiling pot of water thing. And this is not just gas prices. This is inflation in general. But it really is frustrating because a year and a half ago, maybe a year ago, everybody was completely up in arms about this stuff, right? The gas price is this, but the gas price is that. These days, everybody's just kind of like, oh, it's the gas prices. Hey, now they're down to $3.50 a gallon. That's, you know, it's getting better. So they get us used to this crap. And then, you know, then the new normal becomes that $3-4 a gallon, where it should be $2 a gallon. Shoot, I remember when I first got my license, it was, I think it was like 96 cents or something like that.
Yeah.
What are gas prices out there where you are?
They've actually been coming down kind of rapidly over the last week. It was sitting right at, I want to say, $3.59 for months on end. Like, nobody would go over that. And then just in the last week, it dropped almost 20 cents. So it's very fickle. It's very fickle, but Don't let that dissuade you from storing gas or you know, doing anything. Smile, LP, you look pissed. This is what 20 years in the Corps does and another 13 years working for the DOD does. Everything is a terminal glance. You'd be like, all the time. I made a video the other day about it, and then, it didn't really get any traction because the YouTube algorithm, I hadn't made a video in a month. You know, I had a friend of mine had sent me something. We'll just say that he probably shouldn't have sent it to me. And the video was about the Panama Canal and how they're having real problems with getting the ships through it. Right now, there's over 200 ships on each side of the Panama Canal, either both the north and the south locks. That actually is basically 40% of whatever they send to the United States, from Eastern Europe, from the Middle East, so on and so forth. So when the oil doesn't come over here that we're buying now instead of making, you can expect the price of gas to go through the roof. And there are some estimates that it could go well over $10 a gallon. But will that happen? There's no telling. But the traffic jam is real. You know, so the prices are going to go up now, like you were saying, feeling like that, you're feeling like the frog in the boiling pot of water and how they're slowly turning it up. And that's exactly what they will do. You know, it won't be, oh, my God, it's finally reached, the pain's here. And then next thing you know, it's $7 a gallon. No, that's not what they'll do. They'll just slowly raise it. And here's the funny thing. Gas prices should be going down at the end of this month because that's when they stop doing the summer. They mix fuel differently from summer to winter. And at the beginning of October is when they start selling the winter blend, which is actually cheaper. So the prices should be going down, but my guess is that they will start to go up and then, you know, all the other different little things. But yeah, you start to feel like that you're the frog and you're just knee deep in everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Knee deep.
Hey, Jammer said, with all the hybrids and electric cars, shouldn't the demand lower the price? And you would think that as well. And Lisa and I were talking the other day too about you know, the holiday season, the week, the Labor Day weekend and all that, gas prices go up. So you would think that, it's all just a scheme to make money, I think, because you would think that with that, it's not like the holiday creeped up on them and they didn't know that the holiday was coming. So they should have ramped up production. You know, we do that in our own daily lives. We know that when I'm going to need a certain more of a certain thing, we make sure we have more of a certain thing. You'd think that gas companies could do the same thing, but they don't, because gas companies, meat companies, grocers, all that stuff. But I think they don't, because they know that this is an opportunity to pad the bottom line a little bit, and people are going to be more accepting of it because it's the holiday gas prices. It's this or it's that. So the whole supply and demand thing kind of bothers me when it comes to fuel, because there's just so much money being made with all this stuff. And this goes from the gas companies to the politicians to all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people forget too, that these gas companies, their primary mission, the leaders of these large big blue businesses, their job is to make sure that the shareholders make money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if the shareholders made a buttload of money last quarter, they expect to make a buttload of money this quarter. And if you start to do things that are good for the consumer and not for the shareholder, then they throw a fit. They have failed at their primary job in running that company. So keeping those shareholders, you know, and if you look at the end of the year stuff, that's when the prices really go up, because the shareholders want that end of the year bonuses. They want to close out their annual stock portfolio on a high, you know. So people need to remember that there are people that own that business that want their money.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Tiger said here, tip, if you store gas, get summer blend. It doesn't go bad as fast as or evaporate as much. Try to store real gas, not the methanol stuff. I'd never even thought about that. I don't even know that. So I just, whenever it's the price is low, that's when I get it. And these days it's never low. I guess it's lower is the correct vernacular these days.
Yeah. And, you know, he's absolutely right. That blend does last longer, which is one of the reasons. So it costs more money to make that blend because it does last longer. So they don't have to add the different chemicals, things like that. They don't have to put it such a strong refining process. But, you know, in the end, I agree with what he's saying, but I can tell you two things about it. One, I just put a little bit of the, what is it?
Staybill?
No, I don't use Staybill because it has a dye in it that can coat parts. Someone put in the chat, the one they use on boats, that's the one I use. So it comes in the white can.
I'm going to have to re-listen to this podcast and write all this stuff down. But,
and then use the gas. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if your gas is over a year old, then you, come on, man. You're storing a lot of damn gas if your gas is over a year old.
Yeah.
Another thing too is people talk about gas going bad. I dare anybody in the chat right now to tell me of the time. There you go, Seafoam. That's what it's called. To tell me any one time that you poured gasoline that was bad into your lawnmower and your lawnmower didn't start. I dare you right now, because it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. You know, I used to actually own a very big boat. And that was the first thing I asked. It had two 90-gallon tanks on it. And I said, you know, what do you do when the gas goes bad? And the guy who owned the boatyard said, don't worry about that, man. I've gone out to boats that haven't started in 5 years and cleaned the carburetors, and they fire right up. Yeah, it's going to smoke a little bit. It's going to stink, but it's still going to burn.
Yeah.
And so I noticed in the chat nobody typed, oh, my gas went bad last year. So the truth to that, guys, a little bit of brain fart epiphany stuff just happened.
Yeah. I've got something to add to that, but Eagle Lover has said here, Southern Prepper One had receipts today for on EV battery placement, $28,000. Yeah, I've heard that. Absolutely insane. Yeah. One more thing on the fuel stuff, the way I do it And I don't know how you do it or anything, but the way I do it, I've got 25 gallons and maybe I should have more than that. But right now that's what we have. And I've got five cans labeled 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And when I take whenever I go to the gas station and have to refill, I'll take one of those cans, throw it in the truck, and then take that can with me, put it at the end of the line. And that way everything's getting rotated through.
I do the same exact thing. The hardest part of that whole thing is moving all those gas cans in the line.
Yeah.
You think they'd come up with something that, like that, you know, where they would just slide down to you. But no, it's not a big deal. I do the exact same thing. I normally keep about 30 or 40 gallons. You know, it is what it is.
It'd be cool if you could, they'd probably build one, but kind of like the canned foods racks where you pull a can out and they all slide down.
I'm not even going to put a TM on this, guys. You know what would be perfect for that? And you've got to be old enough to understand. You remember the metal slides that burned your ass?
Yeah.
It'd be perfect, man. You take one of those, just put it, you just put it on like a 10 degree, you know, and every time you pulled one out, slide down. It'd be perfect.
Yeah. 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 Could be done.
You don't need the whole slide. I mean, but
yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I just think it's just really frustrating. The whole inflation thing, it's really unnecessary, but that's just the way our system works. I think it's designed to work that way, to increase that bottom line. And with inflation, you've also got the fact that everything's made like crap these days. It's made to break within a year or so. So you have to buy another one. Yeah. And when you think about that, that's part of inflation. It's costing you more. You've got the shrinkflation aspect of all of this stuff where, it's that frog in the boiling pot of water thing again. We don't really notice it, but if we were to go back 20 years and look at the size of a box of cereal or how much cereal got in a box, you'd be like, holy crap, this is how much we got. Sometimes, because we don't eat a lot of sweets and stuff like that. I think it was Lisa Chocodiles or something like that. She really wanted Chocodiles because she hadn't had them in like 10 years or something. And she found some, and they were like 2/3 the size of what they used to be. And it's all ridiculous. And it's all a good reason, to stay up on your preps and get the things while you can.
Oh yeah. It's insurance. That's what it comes down to. No matter what it is that you're buying as a prep, it's insurance. Mm-hmm. It's just that easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is one of the things that, like I was talking about when you first start out, you're preparing for disasters and this and that. And as you grow in preparedness, you start to realize it starts to become a lifestyle. And you start to realize that, hey, if I can take advantage of things before they just get completely out of hand, then I need to do that. And the more we do beforehand, if things do completely go off the rails and prices do completely skyrocket, we're going to at least have, you know, depending on how much we have put away, we're going to at least have buffer time to maybe navigate through that or get through it long enough to be able to figure something else out. Hopefully, and maybe it does go on for longer than we have the means to do that for. And that's where the homesteading, like Grumpy Acres and Tag and all that, that's where that comes in, is being able to produce your own food and withstand all of that stuff through those long periods. But that's kind of what it's all about, is preparing, doing that stuff. That's kind of why I got the Harvest Right. One of the big reasons I got the Harvest Right, because if I can get meat is my main thing. If I can get meat while it's low and freeze dry that stuff and just store massive amounts of it, when hamburger is, you know, $14 a pound in the next year and a half or whenever, I'm not going to have to worry about that as much, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Protein is a very serious issue when you talk about food storage. And, you know, like the path that you're on is great, because then you can freeze dry all basically any meat that you want to, and then rehydrate it later and eat it. You know, yeah, it's going to cost you a little bit up front, but you can do it over and over and over. And eventually that machine will pay for itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the plan. And I've tried some stuff. Chicken in it is fantastic. You can put hamburgers and all sorts of things in it. Real quick, and I want to get back onto the protein thing with you, but Candy was talking about, and this is a very good point, boiling frogs, ostriches sticking their heads in the sand, too many poor memory goldfish in society. That is the mentality of most people. It's short memory spans, and we're guilty of that too. But people have short memory spans. They don't, things become normal too easily for people. They forget about, politicians are a perfect example of this. They're all lying pieces of crap, right? But people forget about that once they get on the campaign trail, they do this and they do that and they say this and they say that, and people are all on board, or they either love them or hate them. And then they get in there and people completely forget about all the bullshit that happened before. The gas prices used to be $2 a gallon. People forget that that's what the gas prices used to be. The meat. I mean, the list goes on and on. People just sort of get used to the new normal, and they're just okay with it. That taxes is another perfect example. They take taxes out of your paycheck, so you never really even see it. That is 100% intentional. I guarantee it. Because if people had to write a check to the government every month, us that have our own businesses sort of do,
yeah.
You start to figure out, hey, man, what I'm giving a little bit too much money to Ukraine here. what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we do get, and not to go off in the left field, but we do get every single thing that we do has a tax associated with it. Mm-hmm. Before you even get your paycheck, there's a tax. Then you got to pay a tax on this and a tax on that. And it's like everybody, it's almost like 20 little mafias all coming after your pocketbook, paying protection. Because if not, we're going to take your stuff or put you in jail.
Yeah, yeah. Shoot, by the time you get product into your home, whether that's meat, whether that's a car, whether, whatever it is, a candy bar, you've been taxed 3-4 times on that dollar bill that you use for that. Back to protein real quick, and then I think we're going to get out of here tonight. But what's some advice as far as if people, a lot of people don't have the freeze dryer. You've got canned meats, you've got even protein powders and things like that. What are some of your tips as far as people storing protein? We've got eggs, we've got chickens. So we've got that they produce eggs. Like I said, I've got the freeze dryer. You've got the canned meats, Legacy Foods. In this contest, I'm giving away a bag of freeze dried beef dices. But what are some of your advice as far as protein and all of that as for SHTF reasons, whether you're talking about something that's a couple weeks, a week, or something longer term than that?
Well, I hate to say this. I really hate to say this, but I'm huge on canned meats. You can buy them at any store. It's basically automatic portion control.
Yeah.
And the expiration dates on them don't really mean anything, because most of the food is actually sterilized before, a lot of people don't even know it. Did you know the MREs, the food in MREs is actually sterilized before they package it?
Yeah. No, I had no idea.
So most of the stuff that's going into these cans is basically sterilized. So, as long as you take care of them, they're not going to be super mobile. But, if you've got shelves upon shelves, if you got one of those metal shelves that used to be $35, that's now $160, that you might find in a bakery or something like that. And you fill one of those, like every shelf with canned chicken, beef. I don't think I've seen any canned pork in a while. Canned turkey, all of those things. You will have easily 6 months worth of protein, no problem. And then mix that up. Go to whatever company that you like to use and get yourself the freeze dried different proteins. The beef, the chicken. I know the beef is more expensive than the chicken. And then you could learn to use those in the appropriate portions. People have a tendency to just go crazy with the scooper. They don't realize that it's basically a third of the size it's supposed to be when it's dried up.
Yeah.
And do that. And then just mix those things up. And God, like you said, the chickens, I had four chickens forever, and every day those chickens gave me four eggs.
Yeah.
So in the end, they paid for themselves. But yeah, if you can do that, then that's great. And then obviously if you've got land and you want to, raise cattle or whatever it is, I say have fun with that. But it's the easiest, fastest way to get prepped up at the lowest cost. you know? And, you know, it's like I still use the 6-can method. I go to Walmart. Every time I go to Walmart, I don't care if I'm going in there for a bag or a pack of gum. I get 6 cans of something, and it's always at least 1 can of protein.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And see, we've sort of gone away, not really gone away from the canned food thing, but we don't do it near as much as we used to because we just don't use it like we used to. We're more of the frozen vegetable type thing. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we probably should, because that is something that we should have more food storage of that. But
yeah.
I've tried to force myself, and we always it's sort of like falling off the wagon, right? We always stop. And honestly, I like canned green beans better than I like frozen green beans. Yeah. So, but I just never think about it. It's always that, but it's going to be much better to have those canned things than the frozen things, because if you're without energy, and that's a huge factor in preparedness too. We could go for another hour talking about all this preparedness crap, but that's another thing. But if you're going without energy, you're going to need those canned foods. But all you got to do with a can of meat is open it, a can of tuna, a pouch of chicken, whatever, just open it and you're good to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have anything to add before we get out of here tonight? Cool conversation. I appreciate you last minute joining in.
Yeah, anytime. I want people to know about if you're going to be going to Prepper Camp this year, I'm actually going to be there. You'll find me at the Walking Around or sitting down at the It's Doomsday podcast. I'm going to be helping that guy out this year. And we're going to be looking for a lot of different things. And this is also in preparation for next year's prep stock. So next year, I will not go to Prepper Camp. I'll go to Prep Stock, which is brand new. We don't even have the webpage for it yet, but some people know about it. If you want to follow what's going on with Prep Stock, go ahead and find me. I'm on all the things. It's Local Prepper, all one word. That we'll slowly be rolling that out. And it's going to be more education focused. Yeah, there will be vendors there, but it's not going to be, hey, I'm the greatest guy ever. I did this, that, and the other thing, and here's my background, and now come to my tent and buy my trash. We're not doing any of that. So,
yeah. Oh, that sounds pretty cool. When, and you plan to have that ready to roll next year?
Yeah, it's going to be 2024. It's going to be at a North Carolina state park. We've already got the site laid out. We've already reserved the site. And now we just got to start knocking this out. I'm going to go find the vendors and we had to cancel this year because nobody wanted to come, and nobody wanted to come for two reasons. One, there was this really convoluted sleep plan that was confusing a lot of people. We actually had like a bunkhouse, but nobody wanted to sleep in a bunkhouse with another person. And the other was, this place was so far in the Tennessee mountains that cell phones didn't exist. it was really, really, really bad, which I don't have a super problem with, but let's face it, a lot of people don't want to be without their cell phones.
Yeah, that used to be a good thing. Go somewhere didn't have cell phone, you couldn't use your cell phone. Now it's like Armageddon.
Yeah, and honestly, the place just, they charged way too much just to use their site, and had way too many restrictions. We just found a better spot, and we're going to, it's going to be pretty good. It's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. Hey, Tag's in the chat too. What's it going on, Tag? Life Done Free, got a cool YouTube channel as well. He does the sort of the Midwest. Is it the Midwest Preparedness Project, Tag? Okay, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Him and Grumpy Acres are part of that. So what you're doing is sort of the same thing. I hate, and Brian and I have talked about this before. Out here in Colorado, we've gone to a prepper convention. And it just, that type of situation, it just bugs me, because you walk in and it's basically booths of people trying to sell you the trinkets and gadgets that we see on a daily basis. And I think it's different than, say, if I'm going to a gun show, that's what I want, right? I want to go in and see the booths and all the shiny toys and all that stuff. But as far as preparedness, I want more of, and this is kind of what we've been talking about the whole show, is that the camaraderie, the community, the learning, the skills, and all that different stuff. Yes, there are things, you know, people do want to support the preppers and all that and buy some of their stuff, but that can't be the main the main focus. I think that people lose their interest when it's like that. I think Lisa and I probably stayed. We did one lap around the place and said, okay, you know, this is a junk.
We've seen it and own half this stuff already. Did we just give these people $40 a ticket?
Yeah.
Well, we're looking at the ticket prices already, and right now we've already started at like $18. So you could literally get in on this, get your ticket, and then forget about it, and it wouldn't be worse than losing two Starbucks coffees.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, one last thing before we get out of here. Wendell Liquor Prepper. That's a funny name.
He's one of mine. He's a troublemaker.
Not having phone service should be a prep. So if you have no service, it's good. Yeah. I agree. And Denise, she had put a comment. We were talking about tips for new preppers in the group. And she was talking about crank the power off in your house over the weekend. Do something like that to learn where your weaknesses are, where your strengths are, how your family's going to react. Same sort of situation right there. Practice not having your cell phone. I think a lot of people would be like heroin addicts, you know, going through withdrawals, and maybe myself included a little bit. But it should be part of your press, because that's all the electricity, all the power. That's all the stuff that could be taken away, regardless what type of disaster you're talking about, big, small, whatever. So. With that, I think we are done then. Make sure and keep me up to date on that. Whenever you've got any new information on that, just let me know and I can put it out. But that sounds like it'd be a blast. I would say that I'll be going or something like that. But, you know, I'm just not saying anything like that, because I've got the Midwest Preparedness Project I need to go to. Never been to prepper camp. So who knows? I don't leave home much. So Denise said, good show, fellas. Thank you. Yeah. Again, Local Prepper, thank you for being on. Anybody that is over watching on my channel, watching on my Facebook page or anything, make sure you go over to Local Prepper's channel, subscribe to his channel. You can get updated on everything that's going on. Super smart guy, super funny guy, you know. Hey, you know, every time I think I've got some sort of brilliant idea, you always have, you know, a lot to say on the subject to make me rethink what I was talking about. So with that, everyone, I appreciate y'all joining in tonight. Like I said, I've been taking a little bit of time off, but I plan on getting back to the grind here on Survivalist Prepper, doing the weekly show again, working on the bug out location. We've got the giveaway I'm doing for bug out location members, which I will be putting out an email this weekend, and we'll be doing the drawing. I'll be doing a live video drawing on Monday for that. So watch for that video. But Local, appreciate you joining in. Everyone in the chat, appreciate you all joining in tonight. And we will talk to you all later.